Okay, great. We have a new Sigya today, which is very exciting. Also, we have to wish Mazel Tov to Zacharia. Zacharia, if we were in person, we would be singing Odi Shama, but well, I'm happy to hold off till 6:30 to 8:30 today to engage. But Mazel Tov, very excited. Daniel wants me to remind you that for a regular person who gets engaged in this year, we go to La Marais, sponsored by the Chasan. But if it's the Shir assistant, the rule is that we go to reserve cut on the tab of the Chasan. Daniel, did I get it right?
Yeah. 100%. So no rush though, Zacharia. No rush.
I'll talk to the REIT's office. Maybe we can just like blow our entire budget in just one night.
Tell them it's a special occasion.
Right, I think so.
Tell them the Shir captain got engaged. So it's a special occasion and reserve cuts on them.
That's it.
Yeah. Everybody in favor, raise your hand, put it to a vote. Oh, unanimously passed. So I'll back you up, Zacharia. Wait, Dov. So we have Dov who's visiting this year, right, Dov? We just lost Dov's screen. But hey, Dov.
Yeah, trying to join on a computer now, which I decided to stop working about 2 minutes before Shear. So I think a bit of screen to show on my phone at the moment.
All right, no
Yeah.
problem. Well, welcome for today. Did you get a chance to look at the Makoros?
Yeah.
Super. Great. Okay, so let's get started. I see Josh is here also. Okay, so let's start with our case in the Gemara. We start today the Sugya of Runya. Runya, there are two cases that the Gemara has in Daf Hey and Aleph. So we could also celebrate that we're already on Daf Hey, which is another thing to be excited about. Two cases of Runya. I want to first focus on case number one, but I also want to briefly introduce case number two. And one of the background questions that I'm interested in is whether the two cases have a common legal principle at heart. Or are the two different incidents with Runya total just two separate isolated cases? I mean, it's fine. The Gemara sometimes does that. The Gemara will sometimes say, here's story A about Runya and Ravina, here's story two about them. And they're not conceptually related, but I want us to also think if there's a common denominator between the two cases, right? Anybody think there was just looking at the two cases? How many of you thought these cases are conceptually related? Anybody think that? No one? Maybe? Scaria, maybe? Ariel, maybe? Yes, let's keep our eyes open for that possibility. But it's okay if they're not related. So both options are totally kosher here. So who wants to volunteer to get us started on case A? Take us through the Gemara? Ned. There you go. Kol HaKodem Zacha. So it's all yours, Ned. Let's go. Yeah, let me make this a little bigger. Yeah, here we go.
Runya. So Runya surrounded Ravina's field from four sides. Amarle have the comedy gudre. So now Ravina wants to put up some fences, so he tells Runya, give me the value of the fence, the fimash gather,
Let me
or
just ask a practical, factual question. Is it, I thought it's Runya Akve Ravina Me'aber Ruchosav. Maybe Ravina encircled him on four sides, right? Is that right, Ned? Is that possible?
Wow.
No, I mean, it's just a question about who's encircling
Yeah,
who. Okay,
yeah.
so go on. So let's assume now that Ravina is encircling Runya on four sides.
Right, okay, so you have the con, okay. I'm gonna have now Ravina wants to Runya to pay for the four walls. Probably if he caught him his own, he also suggests that he also demands that he gives he commanded him that he should give the lowest
Wait, start
possible
from the beginning.
cost.
Havli, Amarle, Havli, Kama de Gadri.
So give me that much that which you I, he wants to pay he wants to make a fence. So pay me the Fimashigadar.
Well, it's all right. So it sounds like Ravina went ahead and built a fence, correct? When he
Yes.
encircled Runya. And then he demanded, what did Ravina demand?
So for Runya to pay for the fence.
At what rate?
The Fimashigadar.
Exactly. So the most expensive rate, literally pay me 50% of the cost of the wall. And what did Runya respond?
Low high ugly. So he didn't give it to him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So then what happened? So Ravina shifted gears
Yeah, so have the economy is low. So he then suggests that you should give him the lowest market rate or the lowest material cost. It also doesn't give it to them. So havli agar nitiruta lo yavlein. And he says, pay me for the minimal costs of paying for a guard for the, I guess, if we read it in from the previous sugya of the amount it would cost to pay a guard to guard the field when it is, when during harvest season. So lo yavlein, he didn't give that to him either.
Yeah, great. So Ravina built this wall that benefited Runya. Ravina now wants to be remunerated for the benefit he conferred upon Runya. And he first sues for the higher amount and he gets no response from Runya. He sues for the medium amount, no response. He sues for the lower amount and still gets nothing. Correct?
Yep.
Okay. So that's the beginning of the story. Then what happens? So Ravina doesn't give up just like that. So what does he do? He's got a legal stratagem up his sleeve. Tell us about it, Ned.
Yomachad have a kagadar dikli. So one day, Ravina planted some palm trees.
Well, I think Ravina was, you know, putting up fences near his
with the palm trees. With the palm trees.
Yeah.
Yeah. He says he tells the sharecroppers, "Zil shakumine kibura dahine." So go collect.
Yeah, and the story is actually not clear in the Gemara, but I would say Pashtus is that who is building these fences? Do we know? Is it so clear? Yeah, I think probably Runya is the one who's building the fences here, but it doesn't really matter, right? So the point is that Ravina says to his sharecropper, what should he do?
So he says that go and take a certain quantity of dates from him.
Yeah. Rashi says an eshkol, take a clump, take a lump of dates from his trees. So you should steal, correct?
Yeah.
What do you think of that, by the way? Is that problematic? Just
steal? If it's of a dina nafshe, then it might not be a problem, but we'll see.
That's interesting, although I don't think Ravina was claiming that the dates belong to him.
No, but the value are, right?
So. Ah, okay, good. Yeah, that's an interesting point. Romy, you had a hand on this?
Yeah, he's also not telling him, not necessarily telling him to actually steal. He just wants him to get to the point where he looks like he's going to steal. He might have a trust issue, but I don't know if
Good. Zil shkomine, you're saying maybe he's not actually commanding him to take. He's just do some antagonistic, provocative act. Yeah, maybe. That's good. Okay, so what happened? Go ahead, Ned. Azal.
Okay. Azal le tuye. So he goes and tries to take it.
And I guess this is consistent with Romy's point that he didn't actually take it yet. He just made the move to take the eshkol.
Okay. Roma Bekalan. And Runya protests.
Yeah, Runya raises his voice, screaming, like, what are you doing in my property? Why are you taking what's mine, right?
Yeah.
That's what Rashi explains. Garbo Runya. Runya scoffed him. So Runya fell into the trap here, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So what did Ravina say?
So Amar Leka, Kalit Datech Deminach Nichalach. So he says that there's a Gilei Dat, that you actually want some sort of protection. Even if it was just a goat that would come in and eat the dates, wouldn't you need protection?
Meaning Runya fell into the trap because Runya's legal argument has got to be loba'ina, meaning I don't benefit, I don't want the fence that you built. But now that he's trying to protect his property, that shows that Runya actually does
wants protection.
Benefit. Yeah, exactly. So pretty good strategy on Ravina's side, right? Yeah. Seems pretty clever to me. Okay, go on, Ned.
Okay. Amar le iza ba'am alav achliye. So he says, Runya responds, if it's only a goat, then you just need to chase it away. So, and therefore, I don't really need the protection. I just need somebody to chase it away.
Exactly. All I need is somebody to raise his voice in alarm when the animals come. I don't need the cost of the wall, right? So,
but I would need somebody there to chase it away.
Meaning you'll still have some cost.
I think a minimum, it would be the cost of the guardsmen.
Exactly. So Ravina seems to have trapped Runya in having conceded that he does benefit somewhat from these walls. Agreed,
yeah.
Ned?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Great story. That's the factual background. So now comes the part that's legally interesting for us. What happens here? Go ahead, Ned.
So I'll talk to me, Rob. Okay. Amarle, Zil, Paise, Bimardi, Paise. Vilo, the internet lachdina, karpuna, libravios.
So what happened?
He comes for Rava and says, Rava tells Runya, go.
Yeah, so Runya, it seems like Runya now complains to Rava, is that right?
I think it's Ravina now.
What do you guys think? Who's coming to Rava?
I also thought it was Ravina.
You thought it was Ravina coming to Rava? So Ravina sues before Rava? I guess the question is, Amar Le, Zil Paise Bimaide Pais?
I mean, he's speaking to Runya. But...
Yeah, the response seems to Runya. The response seems to be that he's speaking to Runya, but it may be, you know, maybe the Asa Lakame could be either one, right? And then just then Rava's poskening for both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what's Rava's psak? Let's hear this. Tell us the psak, Ned.
So go and pay Ravina whatever value, whatever sum would appease him. And I think in that case, it would be the main Tziruta.
Yeah, and I would say more than that, I'd say the translation here, b'maide fayis, is probably translated best past tense, right? Go appease him by paying the amount that he was already appeased.
By. Okay, so the standard he already set.
Exactly, meaning, v'ilo, and if not...
V'ilo... If you don't, then I'm going to poskin in accordance with Rafuna Liriosi, meaning Lufi Mashigan, the higher standard. Yeah.
So what's the clause, the Elo, and if you don't do what?
If you don't pay him in accordance with the standard that he just set forth.
Yeah, then what?
Then I'm going to subject you to a harsher form of, a harsher verdict.
Yeah, it's a very difficult Gemara, right? So what do you get here? They come before Rava for adjudication, and Rava says, look, pay him what he wants. He just wants the lesser rate. And if you don't, you're going to be on the hook for a lot more money, right? This is like a classic strategy of judges. You know, when you want parties to settle, you say, oh, he's making you a nice offer. I would accept that if I were you, because if you don't accept that offer, you're really going to be on the hook big time, right? I have a friend who clerked in, like, you know, for a judge downtown. And so the judge would basically just sleep through all the hearings, wouldn't read any of the briefs. And he would just say, I think you guys should really settle this. And if you don't settle, you're both going to be really sorry. You know, and you'd throw them out of the courtroom. And, you know, that was the strategy in every case. So that seems to, is that what's going on here, Ned? So what's the deal?
It sounds like he's trying to induce them to some sort of compromise.
Okay. Of yeah. So, but does anybody, was there a problem with this Gemara? Like, if you read this Gemara, does this sound totally fair to you or Josh?
It sounds unfair to the part of Ravina. If the thing is that he can get Mashigata, I think that the judge would, protect that.
Yeah. So Josh is pointing out, on Ravina's side, it seems almost unfair. Is Ravina entitled to get Kifi Masha Gadar? If so, then it's pretty strange that Rava said to Runya, just pay him the lesser amount that Ravina was willing to accept.
Well, only if you read it in vacuum without the case. I mean, the case established the minimum. I think the case established a certain standard of payment. And the Giloy Dat is only there to a certain extent.
Okay, meaning Ravina's Giloy Das?
Meaning Runya's Giloy Dat.
Uh-huh. So you're saying that make her a din, in your view, Ned, how much should Runya have to pay?
Based off of the whole interaction that happened with the sharecropper, I think it would be make her a din, just the main Yitzruta.
So then on what ground could Rava say, V'ilo de'ina necha k'rav huna alibidrab yosi? What's that? That's just like a that was just a threat?
You could say it's a threat, some sort of scare tactic.
Okay, so Ned is reading the Gemara saying, Maker Adin, really, legally, Runya is only have to pay the lesser amount. And the Rav Huna thing is just a scare tactic?
Could be. Ned? Meaning, if you read the whole interaction as if you really pin it on the Gilui doc that emerges from the case.
Okay. Tosos toys with that idea, but rejects it. I don't know if you saw those Tosos in.
Yeah.
Tosos says, well, it's possible that Aliba de Rav Huna, Rav Huna Aliba de Rav Yossi, is just lehafchido, but then he rejects that, right? Mm-hmm. Tosos thinks, so what? How do most Rishonim read this view? How do most Rishonim read the Gemara? What's, in principle, what is...
Maker Adin is the halacha is like Midhiyash Gadar, and then the whatever the lower standard is some sort of compromise. That's the...
Yeah, exactly. I think the standard reading the Gemara is that Maker Adin, Runya is on the hook to pay Kifimash Gadar. That's the din. But for whatever reason, Rava is willing to lower it, correct? Why is Rava willing to lower it? And here's the interesting conceptual question in our sugya. Why is Rava willing to lower it?
Presumably because of the prior pious.
Okay, yeah. Because the prior pious. And what's that legal principle? Why? So what's the prior pious in your view, Zacharia?
The fact that Ravina kept lowering his tevia, his claim against Runya. He said, oh, well, at least pay me the Agnatira.
Aha. So it's lowered in consideration of the fact that there was a pious. We know that there was a pious because Ravina sued for less, right? Or Ravina seemed to be amenable to taking less. Good. So let's see, how did the Rishonim explain that? So Rashi says, what does Rashi here say? Zachariah, you want to take us through this Rashi? Peace save my defias.
So, Pais save my defias. Tovel sold his pias ba'agunatira, pol b'nisiratza l'paf. It is better for you, Runya, to appease him just by paying off agunatira, since he was already found to be willing to accept that.
Yeah, meaning we know that Ravina was amenable to accepting this amount, I guess in virtue of the fact that he lowered his claim. And Rava's saying, look, Runya, here's good advice. Just pay the lesser amount and everything. Everyone can go home happy. Okay, does that make sense to you guys? If you just saw this, would you have a problem with Rashi's view? Is this intuitive? Or is Rashi, would anybody here raise a complaint with Rashi's reading of the Sugya? Does it strike you as problematic, Daniel?
Yeah, because you agree to it doesn't mean that's like justice. Oh, because you agree to it, like you may agree to something, but you may have wanted more per se. Like you only agree to it because like the guy was not accepting to give more before.
Yes, this is, so I think Zulti is exactly right. This is a very fascinating case where Zulti says, look, from a perspective of justice, Rav Huna, Ravina is entitled to Kefi Masha Gadar, this higher amount. And it seems like a perversion of justice or an injustice to say that because Ravina was willing to accept less, that therefore he's not entitled to get the amount that justice provides for. Correct, Daniel? So does anybody disagree with Daniel? So I think Daniel's point is basically saying, look, why should the Din Emes be undermined by Ravina's agreeableness to accept less. Daniel, is that your point? Yeah. Does everybody feel the force of Daniel's complaint? Yeah, so let's take Shmuel and then Josh.
Yes, so I definitely agree, but just to play devil's advocate, the whole reason why why Ravina was willing to accept less was because he wanted to recoup some of the costs, because presumably it was going to be difficult to recoup the full cost, and it was going to be difficult to recoup Zol, so on and so forth. So why can't you just say that Rav's quote unquote ruling is the same idea? We know that like really it seems like Runya is never going to pay the full price, even if that's the din, it's just gonna be really hard to enforce that. So the ruling was something less and something that's more reasonable to enforce.
Maybe it's not fair. You're saying there's a concern about enforceability here? Is that your interpretation?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure that's how I interpret it, but like I could definitely read it like that, in which case it bothers me a little less than Daniel.
I would just say that, Shmuel, that's, your view is interesting, except that there's no evidence in the Gemara that we've seen to suggest that there's an enforceability concern here, right? That maybe, you know, Runya didn't have the cash to pay up. Right, so we haven't seen anybody go in that direction. So it sounds like you're in principle in agreement with Daniel. You're just saying maybe there's some other consideration here that would explain. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Josh Brofman, are you in? What's your position on this?
I'm just also going off, so please comment. I think it's a little ambiguous. Like, maybe you can say, according to Rashi, that what's going on here is if Runya went to Ravina and tried to give him the lower amount, I think maybe Rashi would say, at that point, Ravina can say, no, I don't want that lower amount. And if he does that, then like it will go back to like Mikra's injustice. Like, I don't know if we have to say that Ravina is now locked into what he said before, you know?
Yeah, it is an interesting question whether Ravina is locked into this amount or whether he still has the power to go back. That is an interesting question. We're going to see some discussion about that later on, for sure. Romy and then Zacharia.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't know if he's saying that this needs to happen. Right? He said, you should go. Like, you know, it's kind of like what we said about the judge before. Like, you might just be saying, you know, you might be better off if you just go and try to get him to pay this lesser amount, and if you need me to step in, I'll step in.
So you're saying in Rashi, it's an open question whether, So the way you're reading this is, look, you could work it out on your own, or I could paskin. If I paskin, I'm going to have to paskin Rav Huna. So I'm not paskining the Agar Netira amount. That's between the two of you.
Right. Now, it is weird. You should, like, I was wondering, why doesn't he just say what the din is? Why isn't he obligated to say what the din is?
Right, that itself is a chiddush.
But I don't think that I didn't read it as him saying, needs to be the din, and if that doesn't work, then I'll do something else.
This is very interesting. Romy raises a very important distinction. It's not that Rava says, I will paskin b'may de'ifayis, and if not, I'll paskin Karav Huna, right? So it's not that both of these are psakim. Maybe the psak would be one way, but I don't have to paskin, right? You guys could work it out on your own. And that's the b'may de'ifayis amount, right, Romy? Yeah, that's an interesting reading of the Gemara. It's consistent maybe with Rashi. Let's look at Tosos's formulation. And Romy, tell me if you think Tosos's formulation is consistent with your view. So Tosos in Bava Basra talks about our case. And he says, so do you think that language of Tosos bears on this question? The question being whether could Rava have paskined the b'may de'ifayis amount? Romy says no. Romy says if he's paskining, it has to be the Rav Huna Alibajabiosi amount, Kamak Fimasha Gadar. Romy?
No, well, from this language, it sounds like he couldn't. I mean, Adin Hayalo in the past.
Correct.
Once he, right.
Meaning, to my mind, this Tosos in our Sugya sounds as if the Din would have been like Rav Huna Brede, like Fimasha Gadar, but once he was Mephayes, the Din is lower, right? The amount that he was willing to accept, right? Which sounds almost as if Ravina is locked into that lower amount that he conceded. Right, Romy? So the formulation here is a little stronger. Let's also look at Tosis and Sukkah. Let's see if their formulation helps us. Okay, so Tosis here says, Varesh Bava Basra, Gabi Runya, etc. Would have Vilo Daninacha Krav Huna Kfimasha Gadar. Mashilo Dunlo Lefisha Nispayes Ravina Umachalo Bipachos. This language is actually less clear than Tosos and Arsagya. Do you agree with that, Romy? Yeah, this language is not as strong as Tosos and Arsagya, right? It's an open question whether he could have been done on the lesser amount. Okay, Zachariah, did you have a comment on the main issue?
Yeah, I think just on this Tosos point, I don't know. I thought that Tosos and Sukkah kind of launched it to another area, so kind of saying, adding in the Mephila point that maybe, you know, once Ravina has this lower claim and he kind of gives up on his other larger claims. He literally was Mochel and does not no longer has the Mashigather claim.
Yeah. It's almost once you're Mochel, you're locked into the mount that you're Mochel on.
Yeah. That was just kind of how I read the tools was here. Separately, just on the issue itself, it's kind of, I'm not so clear just in the flow of the story. When Ravina presumably brings Runya to Din, what Tavia does he say, right? As in, is he saying, okay, Rava, here, judge our case from the top. I have four fields, I build a fence. Or is he saying, is he just like following up the last conversation, as in, Rava, please enforce my last comment. So as an Izzy thing, I think if it was a Mashigather thing, that would be very shocking. I think all Ravina is asking is for a Thug and a Tear.
Yeah, so you're saying it all depends on how much knowledge did Rava have of the background of the case and whether Ravina presented the claim as Kfi Mashigadar or his lower claim. So look, I'm just asking for this much. Right, yeah. So we'll see a lot of the Nosa Kalim and Shulchan Aruch are all over this question. For them, that's the what knowledge did Rava have and at what stage did the litigation come before him? Yeah. I want to come back to Zolti's point because I think this is the core issue in the Sugya. Zolti says it's a perversion of justice for Rava to paskin less than what Ravina is entitled to. Correct, Zolti? Yeah. Now, I think this raises, I would say, a deeply fundamental question about the role of Beis Din. And that is, anybody want to anticipate me? So I think this really cuts to the heart of what courts are supposed to be doing. Josh, you want to help us? And then Benji?
Yes. Is Beis Din supposed to be carrying out some kind of fundamental bin and emet in the world? Or are they just supposed to be creating a society where everybody's working fine? And if people are mofel at less than bin, then that's all Beis Din has to do. They just have to make sure that we're working fine in society.
Yeah, I think that's a really great way of putting it. Benji, is that where you're going to say along those lines? Or are you going to say something a little different?
Yeah, I was basically going to say the same thing. I was just going to say either to like find the emet or to just resolve disputes.
Yeah, both great formulations. And I think this is one of the most important tensions that we'll see amongst different views in the Gemara. What role is Beis Din supposed to play? So one view is Beis Din supposed to impose this, you know, objectively just solution. They're supposed to impose din on everybody in the world. On that view, we could be sympathetic to Daniel's point, to Zolti's point, correct? Right, Zolti? On the other view, that the primary role here is to resolve disputes, which I guess is another way of looking at courts. Why are courts here? To resolve disputes in a fair way. Then over here, what the courts are doing, what Rava did is totally fine. Ravina wasn't seeking more, or at least Ravina made an overture about how much he was willing to settle for. Why should the court start imposing rules that the parties themselves aren't seeking to enforce, correct? So I would say I like Josh and Benji's formulation. So you could look at this through the role of Beis Din. And I think this is very much an open question. What role should Beis Din be playing? Are they here to extinguish disputes, lahashkid hamariva, to impose like a order of shalom on the world? Or are they here to, in the halachic man sense, to pull down the din from Shemayim and impose it on the world? That's one way of thinking about the issue here. So maximizing the application of din is their goal, in which case maybe Zolti's right that Beis Din should paskin kfi mashigadar if that's the din. Correct? Everybody with me on this? But I would say there's even a different way or a variation of that way of think of the aforementioned way of thinking about this. And that is that even if you go with the formulation that Beis Din is, you know, supposed to be doing din, applying din, the din in this case becomes fundamentally modified in virtue of the fact that one party made an overture of mechila or an overture of pious, meaning once the tviya is filed for less, So it's almost as if the claim itself that's being sought to be adjudicated is the din itself is now sensitive to the fact that the party is not interested in an amount above the number he claims. Does that make sense to you guys? And so the thought is that there's no such thing as din beyond the desire of the parties to adjudicate a certain way. Does that make sense? Meaning, yes, we're trying to impose din as much as possible, but din itself is always going to be a function of what the party sues for. Thoughts on this? And you should know, this is Ma'asim B'chol Yom, because oftentimes people make a claim, they don't really know how much they're entitled to, right? But they make a claim that's often maybe less than what they want. So then do we say that that's justice just requires acceding to their claim, not moving beyond that? Ariel, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, is that really true though? Like, is it selling or really not more this or rather than more important, finding a parking ticket, he was happy to just take $150 versus spending 20 hours to once it's already going to court, we want it to
Hey, Ariel, say it one more time. There was the boss call behind you that was trying to drown you out.
Once he is, meaning Ravina in the first place didn't want to accept entire or charge entire amount because she knew that he wouldn't get it and he didn't want to take it to court because it would be a lot of time on his hands and he'd rather pay the $150 parking ticket than spend 20 hours on the phone and going to court. But once he already has to go to court, can you say at this point you want to make it then get the phone home?
Oh yeah, great point. That's going to depend on the facts of the case, right? Meaning, was this overture of Pius assuming that they're not going to litigate at all? And does that go away once there's litigation? That happens all the time as well, right? Somebody will say, oh, that settlement I offered you, that was assuming we were going to settle. But once we have to litigate on the issue, I'm going to press my claims, you know, for what I'm entitled to make or I didn't. Yes, so we want to keep our eyes open to that, 100%. Okay, so these are some of the background issues that we want to explore. Let's take a look at some of the important moves in the post-skim here. So let me just frame where the Mishnah, where the Shulchan Aruch comes from. So bottom of page 2. The Shulchan Aruch, the Rama, this is a very interesting sugya where the Rama becomes one of the most prominent views in the sugya, correct? So the Rama weighs in on this. Let me just make sure. Well, let me mention the Rama before we get to the Rama. So the Yad Rama and Bava Basra Hayamid Aleph has a comment here. What does he say that's interesting for our purposes in interpreting the case, the Yad Rama's view? How does he explain the differential, the move from Meikar Adin, Kifimasha Gadar, to the amount that, to settle for whatever Ravina was claiming? So we saw Tosos, who says the type of Mechila, Tosis and Sukkah especially. What does the Yad Rama say? Anybody get a chance to see this discussion over here? Zacharia, tell us about the Yad Rama. So tell us the two stories that the Yad Rama gives us. Do you remember the two views?
Yeah. So he presents two possibilities why Rava, the Dayan, is giving this lower amount. So option one is he didn't, because Runya could wriggle out of this Masha Gadar claim. In other words, if Rava had charged him the full amount right at the outset, Runya could have said, hey, well, you know what? I'm going to build an inner fence, and then I'm not really benefiting at all, or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We saw the suggestion in the Ramban and the Rashba. They say that the guy on the inside could always defeat liability by actually building a separate wall. Right. So Ravina is trying to charge him. If Runya wanted to defeat liability, he could just build his own wall and say, look, I'm not benefiting from your outside wall. That's this idea over here. Rava didn't paskin the case right away. Velo paskin l'dine la'alter. Why? Because Tayin Runya Laisi Veligdor Bain Shravinan. Then Runya could always just build a second fence, and that's how he could show he's not benefiting from the outside one. Right, Zacharia?
Yeah, So, to my mind, that's kind of similar to the comment that was made a little bit earlier, somewhat like enforceability. It's like Rava's being strategic as a Dayan, saying, okay, I think I'll be able to get him to pay if I...
Did everybody else lose Zacharia for a second?
Go with the slower claim.
Yeah, you went out for a second, but we understand what you said, and I have to take back my objection to Shmuel earlier, because Shmuel, I guess, on you're reviving Shmuel's point that there is an enforceability issue, right? Meaning this decision, a decision that Runya would have to pay would be unenforceable if Runya could just build a second wall, correct? So that's exactly the strategic view that Rava is taking. So Zacharia, I think you're right, and I'm wrong in saying that nobody takes Shmuel's approach. That's actually a really good point.
Admittedly, that is not at all what I was referring to, but I'll take the points if I can get them.
You're like, Misnave Veni Odeh, Shmuel. It doesn't matter. The truth's on your side, you know, regardless of your epistemic state. Okay, so Zacharia, what's the second view in the Adarman? This is the most interesting. So Inami.
Yeah. So alternatively, it's leaning on the fact that Ravina revealed that he would be happy receiving less, right, to make kanim or agamatira, and therefore Rava only charged him that lower amount because he holds that it's a mitzvah liftsoa, it's a mitzvah to do pshara. Yeah.
So Rava knew that Ravina was, you know, amenable to getting less. And because of the mitzvah livtsoa, because we paskin that it's always preferable to compromise, Rava pushed them to settle. It's not clear to me in the Yadar Ma, if this gets back to Romy's point, if Rava therefore paskin the lower amount, or Rava just said, go settle with him, because it's preferable for you to settle over my doing din. Correct. Actually, from the language of the Yadar Ma, I think it's actually Meduyuk. Ve'emtol hachi lo pasak Rava ledine meikara l'chiyuve l'fimash v'gadar. So that's why Rava didn't paskin the case at all, I want to say. Why did Rava not paskin the case? Because of mitzvah livtsoa, meaning better to let the party settle than to litigate the case through Bezdin. So actually, I think Romy might be right here in the Yadar Ma that Rava wasn't paskining the case on the lower amount. He was just saying, look, there's a settlement overture. Why don't you accept that rather than having me paskin? What about Zolti's concern that it's a perversion of justice to not adjudicate what the din requires? The answer is no. If there's a settlement on the table, always better to settle than to adjudicate according to din. Do you agree with that, Zacharia?
Yeah, and I think there's kind of just a natural just not coming that expressed the difference between these two opinions is, let's say that Runya didn't have any other taina to escape. According to the first answer, it's like, okay, very nice, Ravina offered kind of a compromise, but I would have been, Rava would have passed in the din la'altir of Mashagadar. According to the second opinion, no, that's irrelevant. We always try to strive for the bitzua.
Yeah, exactly. So I think according to the Yadar Ma, according to the second answer, it's always preferable to let the party settle over imposing a din resolution. And that question itself is a question I want to look at a little more closely because that's a very richly philosophical question. It's a very fundamental halachic question. Right? And it's always better just to settle disputes rather than litigate them. I think that would for sure point in the direction that Benji and Josh were suggesting. Benji, which way do you think this points us?
It seems that it's just about resolving the dispute.
Yeah, that's right. And I would say even further here, right? Here, if the Bezdin's not doing the Pshara, if it was the parties themselves, there's no mitzvah to litigate a dispute that's already been resolved. Do we all agree that on that? So for example, we could always be mochel each other. Let's say Josh and I are in a dispute and then we're mochel each other. There's no reason for a Bezdin to get involved. So to here, you might say, Rava is just giving the parties an opportunity to settle it outside of Besdin before he has to adjudicate. So it's almost at the pre-litigation stage. And that's one way of understanding mitzvah livtsoa. This is not a court-imposed settlement from the way I understand the case. It's just a mitzvah to give the parties a chance to take care of it on their own. Romy, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I was actually bothered by both ends of the Arama. First of all, why is the Arama allowed to, like, I'm sorry, why does the Arama think that Rava can Paskin, like, why is he allowed to make the strategic decision? Oh, I don't want Runi to turn around and say, let's build the inside wall. So then he makes a different, why doesn't he just say, okay, well, this is a talk, I'm going to say this. And then when Runi turns, maybe that just pushes us more in the direction of, you know, it's about resolve within and not about MS, maybe. But
you're saying, why should a Dayan start being strategic?
Right, yeah, the Dayan should say what the din is. And if that means that Runi is going to turn around and build a wall inside, then Runi's going to do that. And like, that's okay.
Yeah, saying the Dayan's here. He's like the encyclopedia of dinim. Tell us kind what of, the din yeah. is in this case.
Then, yeah. And then I also, I guess in the separate question on the second answer of the Arama is why, if it's mitzvah liftsoa, why does the Arama need to say that, or why does the case need to be that he's Megala Das, that's Nichole?
Interesting. You're saying here, let's see. Because Ravina expressed that he's willing to accept less, well, I would just say that maybe you have to know whether there's a possibility of Pshara, right? So it just happens to be in this case, given that Rava knew Ravina's openness towards settling, that's why he pushed them in that direction. Otherwise, it could be a futile effort. Right, if one party is like standing on ceremony,
yeah, that seems a little bit like it wouldn't hurt Rava so much. It wouldn't hurt the Dayan so much to just say, anyways, like, you know, would it be okay if we just did this? And then he says no, and then we go back to the litigation. Like it seems like it serves more of a purpose than just like we don't want the Dayan to have to. We should think the Dayan shouldn't have a minor inconvenience of asking the question if no.
That's interesting. But you agree, Romy, that this is clearly a pshara principle, right? Mitzvah liftsoa.
I agree that the mitzvah liftsoa thing is. I just think that the gili das thing pushes me way in another direction. And I think it's almost like we're talking about this in Seder, that like you should only need one of those two phrases. Either it's gili das and it shouldn't need to be mitzvah liftsoa because it's megala das and that's why he has to pay, which I guess falls in the mechila toso sort of direction, I think. Or you say it's mitzvah liftsoa, so it doesn't matter whether or not he's megala das. Should always try to get them to, you know, have this pure thing.
Okay, so Romy's raising another interesting point. And so this is consistent with your first point, Romy, about whether this is the Dayan imposing the pshara or whether it's the Dayan saying, go, you guys work it out on your own, right? Mm-hmm. You're wondering why the Yadarma has to say both that it's mitzvah livtsoa and say that there's already a Giloy Das. Because you're saying the Giloy Das should allow for him to paskin for that amount, for the amount that he's Megala Das that he would accept.
Right.
Why do you need the legal principle of Pshara to explain that? Is that your view, Romy?
Yeah. I mean, and then I think you could ask it in the reverse. Yeah.
Okay. So is anybody else bothered by that? I'm not bothered by that. I think it would be very radical to say, although you're right, this is what the Rama actually does say, not the Rama, right? The Polish Rama, not the Spanish Rama. I think the Spanish Rama is saying that a Giloy Das is not enough for a Dayan to paskin the case one way or another, right? As Zolti said, he's got to do justice. And the fact that a party expressed a settlement possibility earlier doesn't prejudice the considerations of justice. But it is enough for a Dayan to say, hey, look, my job is to do justice, but if you guys are willing to settle this and extinguish the dispute outside of court, matova manayim. Right, so I think that the Yad Ramah is going for the much more modest principle, which is if he knows that the parties are amenable to settling, push them to settle outside of court. So if there's a Giloy Das, mitzvah of Pshara, mitzvah of Tzoa, you put those two together and you get them out of the court case. You get them out of the courtroom. the Polish Rama is taking a different view, which is once you know that there's there's a openness towards suing for a lesser amount, the judge should paskin that lesser amount, which is a very different proposition. Do you see that, Romy? So we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that Rama in a second. Any thoughts on the Yad Rama before we move on? Josh Brofman was shaking his head that he disagrees with Romy. Josh, for the reasons that I articulated or for different reasons?
Yeah, no.
What's that?
Yeah, the same reason. Nothing
okay, more. Yeah, great. We're on the same page. Okay, everybody good to look at the Rama now? Yeah, any other thoughts on the Yad Rama before we move on? Okay. I just want to say we're going to look at Pshara more closely. This is a very interesting application of mitzvah livtzoah. And it'll be interesting. We want to keep our eyes open to see whether this is consistent with how Rishonim and Sanhedrin think of mitzvah livtzoah. Okay, so we're going to look at some of those sources. Everybody okay with that? Yeah, good. So let's take a look now at the Rama's discussion. This comes in Siman Yud Zayin. And let me just give a little background. Anybody get a chance? Anybody look around Siman Yud Zayin and Choshen Mishpat to see what's going on there? Anybody? So it's a lot of rules of Beis Din procedure and treating the parties equally and giving equal respect and time to each party. And then in Siftes, you get this discussion. Anybody get a chance to prepare Siftes? Altas Atzmacha Ka'orche Adayanim. Anybody have a chance to? Benji, is that a hand? Oh, Kobe's got Benji's got a hand. Good. Benji, go for it.
Kobe's got it. Go for it, Kobe.
Are you guys in the same room? That's crazy.
Yeah, indeed. It's a great echo.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, go, Kobe. You got it.
Great. Dayan Zakut, Lacha Mehen. The Dayan sees like something to say for one of them. Ubaldin Mavakish, Lama Venu, Deya Lacha Veb, Lachava Advalin, Osho, Uhu, Mitzar, Lahato, Asa, Batan, Emmet. Oh, he sees that he actually has the right claim, Uneachima, Vakas, he selected Menu because they're so upset. He can't like think it straight and can't like come up with a reason. Nishtavish Unei Asakut, right? Harezeh Mutar L'Sado Ulavino Tafa Adava. The judge can like explain to him like the rationale.
Or Tchilas Adavar, like the basis of the claim.
Yeah, Mishum Padak Tifu Ilim, because he has this, right, because you can open the mouth of a mute.
Yes, exactly. So a judge who sees that a litigant is struggling to articulate himself, the judge could help him articulate his claim. Right? That's one side. That's like one principle. But then there's an exactly a diametrically opposed legal principle, which says what?
You have to like, be kind of careful when you do this, obviously, because you don't want to make it look like a collusion of some sort.
Yeah, like you're an advocate, like a lawyer. Orche Dayanim is like a lawyer. This comes from the Mishnah Navos. Atas Atzmecha Orche Dayanim. Right, a judge shouldn't make himself like an advocate. So the concern is you have a party who comes before a Beis Din and he has certain claims. The judge shouldn't help the party advance his claims. Otherwise, you're like a lawyer, right? You know, you say, oh, don't argue it this way, argue it that way, because you have a better claim if you formulate it that way. The judge should just let the party make the claim however he formulates it, unless it falls into the first part of the Shulchan Aruch, which is, you know, someone who's so emotionally compromised or overwhelmed that they can't even articulate themselves, then you could help, you know, help them tease out the argument or tease out the claim. Did everybody see that? So in Siman Yud Zayin, you have this view that a judge should remain impartial, maybe somewhat removed, and he shouldn't be ke'orche adayanin. Yes? Yes? Now, you know, you might say that's already a tricky principle. What does that mean? Why should that be the case? Somebody comes to Beis Din. There's a fact pattern, right? So Zulti will say the judge's job is to do justice, right? Apply the din. So who cares if you're helping the guy or woman make a claim? You should be getting at the truest result possible. Something along those lines. Zulti, is that right?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah.
That was the most unenthusiastic yes I've heard all day today.
Yes.
That was cynical, yes. So we're done with you for the day. No, I'm kidding. So it sounds like you should be a little removed. So, you know, you want to make sure you're not karcha dayanim. On that simen, the Rama in the tour, first in the Darkei Moshe, quotes our Gemara and articulates a very broad legal principle, which you might say is very consistent with the notion of altasatz karcha dayanim. So Benji, why don't you take this principle since Kobe got us here? So he cites our Gemara and look what he says.
Stop
there for a second. So what did the Rama just say?
That we don't raise his claim to what he might be entitled to. If he makes a claim for a smaller amount, we're just gonna take that claim that he says seriously. We're not gonna focus on precedent of what is historically given for this kind of claim.
Yeah, pretty remarkable principle, right? So the Baal Din puts in a claim for a certain amount. We know that Me'ikar Adin, he's entitled to more. So you shouldn't, right now the Dharma has this very powerful formulation. So what does this formulation mean, Benji?
Meaning that it's not necessary to do the Ikar Adin.
Yeah, which is a very weak formulation right now, right?
But you don't have to. He strengthens it.
Yeah, he strengthens in the next line.
Taud bedin, the hadin choser, that it's a total mistake, and you have to re-adjudicate the whole case if you occurred then.
So these two formulations are in tension with each other, but you're right. His view is not just that it's permissible to not award the litigant the full amount, but it would be a mistake, right? It would be a black letter law error, a mistake from the judge to issue Me'ikar Adin what the party is entitled to. So I want to emphasize for a moment, this is much stronger than what we saw in the Yad Rama. Because in the Yad Rama, what we got is just maybe the judge has an option to either allow the parties to do Pshara or Paskin Me'ikar Adin. Maybe Mitzvah Livtsoa, maybe it's preferable to allow them to go settle the case according to Pshara, what they're agreeable to settle for. Right? That's what we saw in the Yad Rama. Does everybody see that? Meaning, a judge need not paskin based off Me'ikar Adin if he sees the parties are opening to settle. But we did not even see anything in the Yad Rama about a judge paskining the lower amount. We just saw the judge encouraging the parties to resolve it amongst themselves through Pshara, correct? Do you guys agree with that reading? In the Rama, we get something very different, right, Benji? What's the Rama's position?
That the Rama is saying even within Beit Din itself, meaning not settling out of court, but like the Dayanim should only take into account the claim of the litigant, not necessarily what the Ikar Adin is.
Exactly. As when the Dayanim are doing Din, their Din is fundamentally constrained by the type of Taina that the litigant puts forth. This doesn't even seem to be a principle of Pshara at all. He doesn't mention Pshara. It's not in the Siman where Pshara appears. This is in Siman Yud Zayin, where we have the rules of a judge being almost like an impartial spectator. The judge shouldn't be Korchei Adayanim. He shouldn't be advocating for the parties. He shouldn't be helping them. So in that context, we're told that, let's say, judicial restraint requires that a judge never award more than a party seeks. Yes, Benji? And that seems to be a principle of Din. Right? Does everybody agree with that characterization? So that itself is pretty extraordinary. What do you make of it, Benji?
I don't know. It makes sense. Meaning, to say that Beit Din is there just to resolve the dispute, then you don't have to necessarily kick... Meaning it actually, this is might be a good reflection of that machloket. If you say that Beit Din always has to come up with the true emet justice, then if the goal is just to resolve the dispute, then you have to do it outside of Beit Din. But if you really say that the goal of Beit Din is conflict resolution, then even within Beit Din, you could fudge the justice a little bit in order to get them to a point where both of them are happy.
Yeah, I think that's a very good formulation. I think that's right. I think what you're saying is that you see here that even from the perspective of Din, the primary role of the court is to extinguish the dispute, right? To kind of impose a resolution. And therefore, the court shouldn't be to extinguish the dispute. And therefore, there's no reason for a court to issue an award beyond what the parties themselves are fighting about, right? So if the parties are fighting about $1,000, the court shouldn't start issuing awards for $10,000, right? Because if anything, you're just increasing the dispute beyond that which was brought to you, right? So it's like, you imagine the parties are fighting over a boundary dispute, and then the courts are saying, well, why aren't you guys also fighting about the trees, you know, that are hanging over the properties? And so this legal principle seems to be exactly that, that, you know, courts shouldn't be meddling or creating disputes, even if the din is that there is a halachic psak to be issued on this matter. Benji, I think your formulation is very good, right? It's a fundamental constraint on the court's involvement that it be limited to extinguishing the dispute between the parties, or the dispute as it exists. So we have a hand from Dove, and then a hand from Josh.
Yeah, I find it hard to see how the Darche Moshe reads this into the Gemara, since this is similar to the Aramad. The phrase of Asala Kame Darava seems to read much more nicely as Runya going there to ask what he should do, and less so as a legal case.
Why do you think the language of the Gemara connotes that?
The singular.
As well as
Amar Lay directly.
So you could say, Asalakame de Rava. So let's say Runya came before Rava. Yeah. So Runya says, look, Ravina has been bothering me about this dispute. What should we do? So Rava says, here's some really good counsel. Go settle with him. Because were you to litigate, I would impose kifimasha gadar. And so, Dov, your argument is what? Your argument is
that, to some degree, similar to what I think Rabbeinu Hanan says, that the whole point of this thing is, we understand this is primarily showing that the halacha is like Rav Huna Liba de Rav Yossi, and within that backdrop, then the point of this is that he's saying to him, give him whatever he'll take, because if not, the halacha follows the most stringent opinion.
Yeah, so you're saying you don't get anything from our Gemara about a litigant who comes to litigate that the dayan should not award more than the claim that's put before him?
I don't think so. I think the other, to some degree, could work, because it doesn't seem to be based on our sugya, if this were a court case, but I don't think the Ramaz formulation really has anything to stand on if you don't have the sugya here.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. Although I would say maybe the Rama could argue that Rava was of the opinion that... So the question is, well, let's say they came to litigate in front of Rava, right? How much would Rava have paskined for? As you're saying, there's no way to read the Gemara according to the Rama. The Rama's way that he would have awarded the Maidifias.
I don't think it's very conclusive, and it seems to sort of read. I can't think of another case where you have this sort of thing. I'm trying to imagine the legal, like the courtroom, where what's he saying? It seems to clearly be advice. It doesn't sound like a practical verdict.
Yeah, it's interesting.
The VE low is very hard to read as anything other than advice.
Yeah, although I would say that,
And especially the VE low within the Ramah, there is no VE low. If he doesn't pay him, then he's going to impose a greater court thing. It seems.
Yeah. We'll see. Some of the Nosei Kalim on the Shulchan Aruch try to finesse this. And what they say is that maybe the V'ilo could mean So go appease him for the amount he's willing to appease. But if he's not amenable to being appeased at all, then we're going to paskin like Rabbi Yossi.
But then the Ramah doesn't seem to have any raya anymore.
You're saying even
unless the Ramah wants, unless the Ramah is trying to sit more on the lines of the Dayan's first recourse should be to try to arrange a shara. But
the Ramah is giving us a different legal principle.
And then also I don't know if you can prove this because there could be this assumption that Ravina, who is himself halakhically knowledgeable, knows that he is asking for less than he actually deserves.
Yeah.
The very fact that he's willing to take this implies that he thinks that he's willing to accept it. If some random person off the street did that, I don't think you'd have that same degree of evidence.
Yeah, I think you're. So does everybody see Dov's point? Dov's point is basically it's very difficult. The Ramah claims that he derives this from our sugya, correct, Dov? The Ramah says.
Yeah.
Near a lilmod mizu, right? That's he's from Arsagid Babastath Hamid Aleph. But it's actually very difficult to see where this comes out of Arsugya because Arsugya is not obviously a case where they're litigating yet. And if anything, the Dayan here, Rava, says if he's not Mifuyas, I'm gonna judge Kfimashagadar, which is a much higher amount, which shows that the judge is not locked into the lower amount. Correct, Dov?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I want us to. So we're going to think a little more about that, but I want us to think about two things along those lines. Number one, is it possible that Siman Yud Zayin is actually built on some sort of pshara principle? Is there a Ramah's psak here, maybe based on idea of pshara? So I want us to think about that. Maybe like the Dayan's paskening a pshara based off the lower claim. So think about that point. But then furthermore, to think about whether. Maybe this psak is true, but the litigant could always change his claim in the middle of the din Torah, right? So so long as he's still asserting this lower claim, that's the amount I'm going to be mechayiv, but that's still possible that he could raise the amount to a higher amount. But elo, right, if he goes back to asserting his higher claim, then we're going to be mechayiv that amount. So it's not like you're locked into any one number from the beginning of the proceedings, right? It's just so far, this is the amount he's claiming. So you have Josh and then Romy with comments.
I just want to point out maybe that we had two formulations before about, was it like Beitin going by Emmet versus Beitin trying to resolve disputes? And then like your formulation about how it's all within Din, but the litigant coming actually changes Din. I think the fact that he says that if you go more than the guy claimed, then it's a din tod and you have to be close there. That sounds less like the first formulation, more like the latter. It's that it's totally wrong, right? Even if their purpose wasn't to resolve disputes, this still does resolve the dispute if they go more.
Yeah. So this sounds much more like the second formulation, right? I agree with that because what I think I think the significance of that latter formulation is that. Even when we think of din is fundamentally a result of the claims of the parties, right? There's when it comes to din, there's no din distinct from the desire of the parties to seek recourse through the legal system for some grievance or some amount, right? So there's no such thing as talking about objectively what's the right sock for this case without knowing what the parties are seeking in this case. So you see that, Josh? It's very Zolti would probably say it's a radical conception of din even. Right? What is it? Why is everything rage agent relative? Right? Sometimes we just think of like Choshen Mishpat as being what are the objective rules? And if you take this Ramah seriously, arguably there's no such thing as an objective rule separate from the das of the parties, what grievance they're coming to solve or what recourse or repair they're seeking. Great point. Romy, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I was just going to ask you to reformulate that, but you just did.
Yeah, is this reformulation helpful?
Yeah, just in terms of how it works within the concept of din, but that makes more sense.
Yeah. We're going to talk more about this when we look into Pshara a little bit. We're going to spend the next year looking at Pshara a little more closely, but that's the idea, right? The idea is that the rights, you could think of halacha as setting up a system of rights and duties, but those rights and duties are going to be contingent on how the parties want to assert them or how the parties demand them in a case. Do you see that? Yeah. I mean, to a certain extent, we saw this in Hezek Ria. Like, is Hezek Ria independent of the Kepeda of the parties, or does it depend on the Kepeda of the parties? So this is a similar type of Chakira, but applied to a judge's obligation in resolving or in adjudicating Choshen Mishpat disputes. Dov, do you still have a hand or just a lingering hand? Looks like a lingering hand. All right.
Yeah, great. Sorry.
No worries. Let's just look at the Ramah's formulation in Hilchos Dayanim Siman Yud Zayin. So I think Benji, I think you were taking us through the, let's look at his Ramah and look at the formulation in Shulchan Aruch, not on the tour.
Yeah. Baldin Shetavah Chaviro, the Ad Davar Mod, the Din Roesh,
the Hadayan,
the Hadayan, Roen Shetavlo, Al Pi Hadin, Yotermi Mashetavo. Ain lo the din lifsok yoter mimashitava the impasak lo yoter havitav b'din v'chode. Right.
And notice how the Rama worked out that tension in his earlier formulation. In the Darkei Moshe, he said ain sarich lifsok lo rak if yimashitavo, and here he says ain lo the dayan lifsok yoter mimashitava. So I guess he worked out that that peculiar formulation, and by the time he's writing on the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah says a dayan should not paskin for more than the litigant is claiming, right? Which again is a very strong legal principle. And we're going to look at a lot of the Nosei Kalim here to see how to understand the Ramah's position. But at least, does everybody understand the main? Does everybody see a sympathetic reading of the Ramah? Why this legal principle makes sense? Yeah, does anybody have an objection? So, you know, Dov saying, where does the Ramah get it from in the Gemara? Good question. But does everybody see why the Zulti issue shouldn't be such a strong issue? You know, that there's, you know, does anybody still have the feeling that this is a perversion of justice some way? Dov?
The one, I guess, the flame I could point out is this would kind of have to be contingent on the person knowing that they're asking for less. If someone thinks that they're only owed, say, $100 and they actually would have been owed $1,500, they might be happy for the first few days. But if they happen to learn in the future what they actually were owed, they're not going to have been very effective after that.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you're just worried about a toas, mechila b'toas type case where somebody later realizes that they messed up in their claim.
My general impression of the way Bezdin seems to work is that it's more that people are presenting what happened than they're presenting what they should get.
Yeah, well, in this case is clear from the way the Ramah presents it that he's tovea be'ad davar muat. Right, so it sounds like he's, you know, putting in a claim for how much he thinks he's entitled to.
That's sort of supposed to be part of the way Bezdin works.
Yeah, I think that's a broader question beyond the scope of this sugya, but I'm just pointing out right now that the Shulchan Aruch the Shulchan Aruch definitely has this idea that he's tovea a certain amount, and the dayanim shouldn't give more than that amount, right?
Yeah.
So it's a fair general point that we could come back to, but I think on its face, there's a good case to be made for the Ramah's position. Yes, Zulti, are you coming around to this? Yeah. Okay. We're going to look at, I encourage you all to just open Siman Yud Zayin and Shulchan Aruch before next year. And you can just look through the Nosei Kalim. I'm going to add them to the source sheet, but you'll see there's a Tumim, there's a Shach, there's a Pischei Choshen, there's a Pischei Tshuva. A lot of people weigh in to figure out why this Psak, whether it makes sense or not. I want us to briefly take a look at the second case in the Gemara before we move on, and just to think about whether these two cases are related. So volunteer just to introduce us to the second case, the second Runya case. Anybody get a chance to look at it quickly? Anybody peek out of curiosity at the second Runya case? Charya, did you get a chance to see it? Oh, yeah. Ariel. Ariel's got a hand. Ariel, you got a hand?
I peeked at it. I'm not sure I fully grasped it yet.
Give us the quick version. You don't have to tell us all the things about, you know, the cobbler and what how much leather it goes for. And...
Is it going to be my leather?
Yeah, so take a stab at it here.
Okay. Ronya Zavan Ara Mitzra Dravina. Ronya was selling land that was
Here I think Ronya purchased land.
Or he purchased land that was second. And Mitzah de Ravina, it was, I guess, next to Ravina?
Yeah, on the border of Ravina's property.
Sav Ravina l'saluke misham dina devar mitzah. And Ravina wanted to remove him from there because he was the person who had land next to it. And therefore, he had the right to choose who gets the first dibs on the land or the first...
Yeah, so the law of the abutter, right? Dina devar mitzah. Anybody know what the Dina Dar Metzra is? Means that as a, if you own a property, you have first dibs. You have the right of first refusal to buy the abutting, the adjacent land. Here, it seems like Runya purchased it and Ravina wanted to displace him under a claim of Dina Dar Metzra, meaning that Ravina was going to say, I have the first right to purchase this land. In Halacha, you could even dispossess the person after the fact. Even if he bought it, you have like 30 days or whatever it is to dispossess the guy. Correct, Ariel?
Yeah.
Okay, so what happens? So they go to a Din Torah.
I guess
Ravina was pretty litigious, right? Or Runya was pretty litigious. Sounds like they had their fair share of neighbor issues.
Yavala Ravina Amar Inshi Arba Litzala Arba Litzlala.
Yeah, so don't worry about what that phrase actually means right now.
From what I looked up, yeah, it means that like they each have, no matter what, even though one person's land may be bigger than the others, they each have an equal amount of saying that they can choose who can live in a specific area.
Well, let's see Rashi's formulation. Rashi says over here, "Bekach amar lo." Okay. Kimo shetzruva. So vize anihu. Runya is a poor person. Vitzarech lo. Yeah, go for it.
And he needs this for his own money. The same way that you thought you were doing this because you were doing the correct thing in your scenario because it was your right. Because he needs this land because he's an ani, you should do the yashav atov and allow him to purchase this land and don't remove him from.
Okay. So does everybody see that? This is very, very important. So what is Dina Dvar Metzra? Dina Dvar Metzra is the right to purchase the abutting land. Does anybody know the source for Dina Dvar Metzra? What is the source for Dina Dvar Metzra? Anybody know? What's the pasuk at the Gemara quotes? Vasisa Yashar Vatov. That's what the Gemara quotes as the basis for Dina Dvar Metzra. It's the right thing to do because the abutter gets to gain from having adjoining lands. So in this case, who is it? It's Rav Safra says in the same way that you're trying to remove him under a claim that he should do what's right and what's good to you as the landowner so that you could have adjacent properties. Kach ani omer lecha asei yashar v'tov l'ani zev al tisalkeyu. Nebuch, he's a poor guy. Let him have the property. Don't remove him. It's a headache. Let him benefit from the land. So my question to you guys is this a lifnim bishuras hadin type of advice or psak from Rav Safra, or is this a meikar hadin psak from Rav Safra? Anybody?
I thought we were initially reading it. That was a lifnim bishuras hadin.
Why do you say that?
Because based on a halachic basis, there's not really, meaning you're considering an outside reason to why you would say to give him this piece of land.
Okay, good.
Because an ani.
Yeah, so we're saying that this is almost supererogatory. It's above the call of duty. Is that what you're saying, Ariel? Meaning it's like Vasisa Hayashar Vatov, so maybe beyond the call of duty, to be gracious and let Runya have the land. That's one way of reading it. And Rashi also has a second formulation, which gets at the same idea. Kach amar lo Rav Safra lo Ravina. Take us. Ha'ani zes chara mu'at. This guy has so little money.
Lefikach. Lefikach asa yashavato v'ti lo sadeh zu leparnasat beto. So give him this piece of land so he can support his family.
Also, right, under which legal principle? What would be the basis for ceding the land to Runya?
I say Yashar V'tov.
Yeah, exactly. And then again, Rashi has this third formulation here, which also appeals to Asisa Yashar V'tov to cede the land to Runya. So the question that I want to know is this second case Me'ikar Adin or Lifnim Mishuras Adin, as the citing of the Asisa V'Yashar V'tov suggests? And if it's whichever one it is the legal principle at work in the second case similar to the legal principle at work in the first case? The first case that we read about Kifi Masha Gadar and the cost of the fence. Anybody have a thought on that? Romy?
Well, isn't it, I just think it's also important to point out that if the first principle is also only based on Aziz HaYashar V'tov, then it's not really, it's like a totally different case because, I mean, you still have to determine whether or not the principle of Aziz HaYashar V'tov is Lefnim Mishrat HaDin or not. But it's not really relevant to our conversation either way because they're just two of those things, whether it's Din or Lefnim Mishrat HaDin going against each other.
Exactly. So Romy's making an excellent point in the second Din of Bar Metzra case. Given that the whole law of Dina de Bar Metzra is grounded in Vasisa Yashar V'tov, right? So what's the legal basis for Ravina to have a claim to the land appealing to Vasisa Yashar V'tov? So then you might say that the law of Dina de Bar Metzra doesn't apply when it comes at the Vasisa Yashar V'tov of somebody else. Correct, Romy? In which case, actually, the psak in the second case of the Gemara is not a psak based on supererogatory conduct lifnim mishuras adin. It's actually just an internal limit meikar adin in applying dina de bar metzra. Roni, that's your point, correct? Yes, that's a very important. That's one way of reading the second case of the Gemara, that it's a psak meikar adin as an internal limitation on the principle of dina de bar metzra. It'll be self-defeating to award the property to the abutter under a theory that, hey, Asisa V'Yashar V'tov to him when it comes at the expense of the Asisa V'Yashar V'tov of the Ani. That's Romy's reading. Although, it's quite possible to read the Gemara differently and say, yes, it happens to be that Dina de Bar Metzra is grounded in Asisa V'Yashar V'tov. That's true. But then Dina de Bar Metzra becomes its own legal principle. And in this case, Rav Safra is saying that Ravina should go lifnim mishuras hadin, meaning beyond the call of duty, and separately yield to the ani, because that's what is appropriate given the circumstances. Not as an internal limit on dina de bar metzra, but as an external moral consideration outside of dina de bar metzra. Right? Notice that in the different formulations of Rashi, in the first formulation of Rashi, Rashi says, oh yes, in the same way that you're trying to get the property under Asisa V'Yashar V'tov, so too I appeal to the same principle for you to yield it to the Ani. That sounds like an internal Dina de Bar Metzra consideration, right? So what Romy said, it's Meikar Adin. Correct, Romy? But the other formulations, you know, move away from the fact that Dina de Bar Metzra itself is grounded in Asisa V'Yashar V'tov, and you might say, as a separate moral principle, lifnim mishuras hadin, you ought to cede it to him. Okay, so that's something we want to keep our eyes open for. Does you think this relates to whether the two stories are related or not? Anybody have a sense of how this relates to the first case? Josh Brafman?
Well, yeah, if we said it's like external, then you can say in both cases there might be a fundamental din, and yet somebody's being told to go less than that. I don't know.
Yeah, just say a little louder, Josh, because your mic was not so great.
I was just saying you could argue if you take one formulation each sugya, then in both sugyas there is a fundamental din, but somebody's being told not to follow that din and instead go for, you know, a different way to resolve the dispute.
Yeah, excellent. Do you guys hear Josh? So Josh is saying maybe the common denominator to both sugyas is that there's a din, and then the psak is to avoid the din and go beyond the call of duty. Yes? Almost like a non-din resolution, a lifnim mishuras adin resolution. Does anybody see any evidence for reading the first case of Lefnim Mishur HaSadin? So the second case we know, right? Because Rashi explicitly cites Masisa Yashar Batov, but we have Romy's question whether that's internal or external to Din of Bar Metzora. What about the first case? So if you skip down to the sources on Pshara, at the very end, probably no one got here yet. So if you look, for example, look at Rashi on the pasuk of Asisa Yashar Vatov. Yeah, right. So we have Rashi's quite explicit about this. Who wants to? Eitan Jesselson, you want to read this Rashi for us?
Sure. So Yashar Vatov zop shara lefni mishurat hadin.
Yeah. What does he say?
That it's a compromise and it's lefni mishurat hadin.
So what's lefni mishurat hadin?
It's a compromise that. Really,
yeah, that's right. Compromising in litigation, pshara, is itself a form of lefnei mishur hasadin, right? So actually, if you go with the Yad Ramah's reading of the sugya, so what do you get? How did the Yad Ramah read the underlying legal principle in the first case? What was the legal principle for not paskening kfimasha gadar?
Then to corner the other man, then he holds that really to a compromise, so then there would be the famous Shurat Adin.
Yeah, exactly. The Yad Ramah said it's mitzvah livtzoa, it was because it's a mitzvah to compromise. The mitzvah to compromise, arguably itself, is a mitzvah of lefnei mishur hasadin, right? Zup shara lefnei mishur hasadin. The Ramban has it also. The Ramban says, Sisa yashar ba'atov. The Torah says, B'derech klal shiyasa yashar b'chol davar, ad sheyikanes b'zeh hapshara v'lefnei mishur hasadin. You should go beyond the letter of the law until you compromise and lefnei mishur hasadin. So it's an interesting question to what extent these two cases in the Gemara are related. Of course, you could read the two cases the other way. You could read them Romy's way. So if you read the Ramah, the Polish Ramah, right? Probably shouldn't say that because everyone gave Bernie Sanders a lot of grief when he said that he's a child of Polish immigrants, right? It's like they're not Polish, they're Jewish. So, but in the Ramah, I don't think there's any ambiguity about that, right? So, the Polish Ramah, the Jewish Polish, gets complicated. So, the Ashkenazi Ramah, if you take his reading of the Sugya, that this is maybe Meikar Adin, arguably, that when the Toveya puts in for a certain amount, that's the amount he's bound to. And you take Romy's reading of the second case, that it's an internal limit of when Dina de Bar Metzora applies, then you read both cases as being decisions Me'ikar Adin. Correct, Romy? Do you agree with that?
I think so.
Want to think about it a little more? Or?
Yeah.
I mean, my point is that there's a way of reading the first case, the Kfima Shagada case, as Me'ikar Adin, meaning the din, whenever somebody puts in a lower claim, is that they're locked into that claim. A dayan shouldn't award more than that. So that's not supererogatory. That's just the halacha. Right? The halacha is not going to give you more than you yourself want under din. And then the second case, you'll say, why was Ravina not entitled to displace Runya? Because there's an internal limit to applying din of the Bar Metzora.
Yeah, but right? That doesn't need to be din.
The internal limit.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. The internal limit is if Dina Dar Metzora itself is grounded in Lefnei Mishur HaSadin, Asisa Yashar Vatov, but we're not going to apply that when it's self-defeating because it comes at the expense of the welfare of the other party, then the din is that there's no Dina Dar Metzora.
No, but that's an internal limitation on the din, on the Lefnei Mishur HaSadin.
Okay, but then the legal rationale for Runya not being allowed to displace Runya, for Ravina not being allowed to displace Runya, is that's the din. The din is that he's not allowed in this case. It's not a psak that is abridging. It's not a psak that's abridging Ravina's rights, halachic rights. Correct. Meaning the idea of lefnei mishur hasadin is that the din gives you this right. But lefnei mishur hasadin, we encroach upon your rights.
Right.
So
if the, yeah.
Go ahead.
if the din is that he that Ravina shouldn't have the right to you know to buy the adjacent land, but Lefnimish has a din, we say you didn't din the bar mitzvah.
But then Lefnimish has a din, says that din the bar mitzvah doesn't apply when it's an ani.
Then all we've done is say Lefnimish has a din versus Lefnimish has a din reverses to the original din.
Right. So what's the psak based on when we deny Ravina's claim?
Oh, interesting. You're saying the original psak is based on din, but I don't think that's true. I just think it's a technical point that we revert back to the din.
Okay, but the point is that it's din that explains the ultimate decision. Right, Ned? Ned, are you in agreement with me? Or he's muted, but I think Ned's in agreement.
I'm just thinking back to the line from Avaron in the Ethic of Independent Halacha about whether or not this is all a farce. And
don't be that article just complicates things. We could talk about that article separately, but don't inject that article into here. That just makes things complicated and unnecessarily complicated. We could talk more about this, but I want us to think about how these two cases relate to each other. What we're going to do in the next year is I want to examine these makoros on pshara to flesh out the Yad Ramah's theory of our sugya. This idea that pshara is preferable over din, and that explains why Rava paskined the way he did, or why Rava threw out the case and didn't want to paskin. And then to look more closely along the lines that Dov raised, what exactly is the Rama's reading of our sugya, such that he could extract the Simen Yud Zayin halacha that he claims to have extracted from our sugya? The idea that a dayan should be, I guess, judicially passive or judicially removed and not giving an award beyond what the party is actually seeking. Okay, so we want to examine those two principles in the next year. So both Pshara, and I'm going to add Nosei Kalim on Simen Yud Zayin to try to flesh out the Rama's position. Ariel, do you have a quick comment?
Yeah, I wanted to know if we can extrapolate the fact that we learn in the second case that Ronya was an ani to the first case.
Interesting. I wouldn't think that they're related. I don't think, because nobody raises the ani consideration in case number one. Unless that's what Shmuel was partially getting out in his enforceability issue, but I don't think Shmuel was getting at that. Right. And Shmuel right now is denying it, so. Good. All right. Anybody else have a quick comment before we close for the day? Kobe, did you have a quick comment? You're good? All right. Shkayach, everybody. Hopefully I'll see you all later at the Zacharia party. Right, 6:30 to 8:30, Zacharia.
Yeah, you have to solve the set theory yourself.
That's right. Work through Gödel's paradox or something. All right, shkoyach, everybody. So we'll pick up on Tuesday with Simen Yud Zayin discussion and Pshara discussion. Take care.